don't feel so lost with you. Fly through the mountain ranges, but I'll never see the danger. That fire boss is swinging, but our hearts are full. I'm not worried when I'm with you.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Let's Be Real. It's post-Thanksgiving. It's time to put up our Christmas decorations. We have moved so much in the past 2 years. It isn't actually that much, but in 2020, we sold our house and we moved into, 2021, we sold our house. We moved into a rental in the city so we could figure out where we wanted to live. And then we moved out of the rental into our house now. So this is our first Christmas in our new house. And let me tell you, I am excited. I'm trying to figure out where to put the Christmas tree. I don't know where it should go. I told everyone who comes to my house, I'm like, I used to have a wide house because it was a ranch. And now I have a tall house because it's a row house. Who knew that decorations are either wide or tall, but they actually are. Christmas trees are wide or they are tall. And we need some tall stuff. So I'm working on that right now. Very, very fun, very exciting. And I'm really glad for the conversation that I'm going to share with you in just a moment from Blaine Hogan. But before we do that, just want to make sure if you haven't done it yet, come get on the email list. I know you get a million emails. I know you're like, Nicole, I don't want your email, but just try it. Just check it out. I make it so short. I just put like three things to think about. And honestly, even if you only think about one of the three things, my thought is it's going to be encouraging to you. It's going to edify your life in some way or another. And then it also just lets me and you be in touch and we won't lose touch with each other because it's hard to keep up with podcasts and all that stuff. So if you haven't yet, NicoleEunice.com/realtalk comes out every Wednesday morning. I send you just a little thought. And in that real talk, if you aren't on there yet, those who are on there know that we have been gathering stories for my next book. My next book's on unexpected seasons. They didn't let me name it this, but I kind of wanted to name it like, Dear God, what the? Whenever you're in a season where you're like, how did this happen? Why am I here? I didn't expect this. I don't like it. How do I continue to live with purpose and passion in this season, whatever that looks like? And you may immediately think of what that season means for you. Because when I talk about this with people, they're just immediately something comes to mind. They're like, yeah, you know, I'm caring for my aging parents. I'm single and I didn't expect to be. I'm married and I didn't expect to be. I thought this would be XYZ and it's not. And if you've been through a season like that, you know that the last thing that you need is like a five-step plan, because that's not the way we navigate through a season like that. However, there is this place where when we have wisdom from others, when we are able to see that there has been someone who has gone ahead of us, who has been through a difficult season, an unexpected season, and they have something that they've gleaned from it, that is actually really powerful. And I need you, and I want you to share your story with me so that we can share it in the book. So we're going to be culling through some stories and picking 10, 11, 12 of those stories to actually share in the book with your name, with your byline. It's a chance for you to really bring what you've learned to someone else who might be going through something similar. So if you want to submit a story for this next book, you can do so by getting on the Real Talk newsletter. And we've also dropped the link for you in the show notes below. But get on it, hurry on up, because we're going to wrap it up this week so we can start working through the stories that we have there. But would love for you to consider it. If you just feel a little bit of a like, ooh, maybe I should do something like that, I want to encourage you to do so. If nothing else, it's going to be super therapeutic for you. Super healing to think and look back on seasons and look at what you've learned and how you've grown and share that with others. So that's an opportunity for you. We're about to get into some really incredible stories actually with our guest today. Our guest today is Blaine Hogan. Blaine is a writer. He's a filmmaker. He's a creative director. He's the former creative director of Willow Creek Community Church and really was on the forefront of bringing art back into the popular sort of seeker-friendly church environment. But Blaine has written a book really about his life, a memoir about his own suffering and his own struggles and how those have been redeemed and how he's embraced this life of kind of radical courage and creativity. So I want to give you a heads up before we get into this, that this is a bit more of a trigger warning type interview because of Blaine's experience with abuse and his addictions. So if that is not right for you today, or you have some little ears listening and you want to save this for later. It's really powerful, really, really good, but just wanted to give you that heads up. I love this book. I just devoured the whole thing. It's just so, so good. His book's called Exit the Cave, Embracing a Life of Courage, Creativity, and Radical Imagination. I know you guys are going to love this conversation. So come on in and take a listen as Blaine and I laugh and really discuss with great, great honesty, the things that are difficult in life and how God uses those to bring us to a whole new place. Enjoy. Okay. So let's talk a little bit about the book and get into some of that stuff. First of all, it's such a joy to have you on the podcast. We obviously just, now you know that I am an actual fan and can remember seeing you perform. And so yes. Been following your work. And you know, I want you to know that your last book was really meaningful to our creative team as well.
Really?
And they would, yeah, read it together as a team.
Oh my gosh.
Talked about it all the time. I know. So the work you do really matters. So thank you.
I appreciate it. It was barely a book. So I'm grateful that you...
Well, sometimes I think barely a book is a lot better of a choice than trying to write a whole book, because nobody cares as much as we do, right? I'm always like, I always try to remember that as I'm finishing a work. I'm like, honestly, if I read someone's book and I get one thought out of it, I think it was worth it. Totally. So I don't know why I'm acting like this is, you know, the whole thing, the whole, you know, my whole life.
Right. But which I know you're interviewing me, Nicole, but you have a deadline that you are about to turn in a book tomorrow.
I do.
How do you feel?
Almost done. I feel like this one has been a real labor of love. Mm-hmm. I think the interesting thing about a labor of love is it feels more like I have no idea if it's terrible.
Yes.
Or if it's beautiful. It's probably not in between because it's either so driven by emotion that it's confusing or hopefully, you know, hopefully it's got a clear trajectory that a reader can follow that brings them to a place that's beautiful, which by the way, is how I feel about Exit the Cave. I am in awe of like memoir writers. I just interviewed another girl named Nicole Lynn Lewis who wrote a memoir about teen pregnancy. And I just was so taken, and with your book as well, with the ability to weave really personal stories into redemptive themes that everyone can connect to. So it was awesome and funny, which is great.
Good.
When you're dealing with difficult topics.
Right.
So exactly. So yeah, this is, and by the way, I do want to say, and I'll put this in the show notes as well, just like a trigger warning that we are going to talk about sexual abuse and childhood abuse. And it's really important, I think, for everyone to know that, so that if this is not for you, you can opt out, but hopefully it will be really helpful for those who are in a place to hear it. So I do want to ask you a little bit. I know you as a creative director. I know you as a person who's been a thought leader in the church in so many creative places. I know that you're a producer, a director, but you wrote a book called Exit the Cave, and I want to know where that came from.
Sure.
And why now? Yeah.
Sure. So I was 17 years old. I grew up in a town called Blaine, Minnesota, and I was going to Blaine High School.
Not an accident, everyone. This is a true story.
Yeah. So I was born in Fargo, North Dakota. We moved to Blaine when I was 4, and it was just like a random coincidence. Parents found a duplex in Blaine, Minnesota, and were like, that's the place. And it was, I mean, a great boost of confidence for me, where I would go around and say the city of me everywhere. I had a water tower with my name on it. But I was going to Blaine High School. And sitting in the back of a humanities class, and our teacher told us the story of Plato's allegory of the cave. And real brief, it's basically Plato's story of how someone learns the truth. And so he tells this story of this group of people, they're chained to the floor, they're looking up at a giant cave, and all they're seeing is shadows. And at some point, one of the members of the tribe stands up and looks around and sees that kind of all of this has been manufactured, that there's this huge fire and there are other people walking objects past the fire, creating this shadow, or all of these shadows. And then beyond the fire, he sees this dot of light, which the person begins to move towards. And, you know, moving towards the light, it's painful. He tells this whole story. Eventually, the hero of that story makes their way out of the cave. They see the objects for what they are. And then there's a twist at the end of the story, because instead of running away from the cave as fast as they can, they re-enter the cave. They go back into the darkness. They stand before their tribe and they announce to all of the people that are looking up at the shadows, there is so much more. And I remember being a 17-year-old kid who even at that point had already experienced a good bit of darkness, some sexual abuse that that occurred when I was younger. My dad, who was struggling with various addictions, a mom who had a really severe form of diabetes that caused her to seize, kind of my whole childhood. And I remember sitting, listening to that story, being just captured by it. And on so many levels, and most of which just the idea that, could that be true? That there is more? Could that be true that maybe the shadows aren't everything? Could it be true that I could find myself in sort of something that felt more open and free and full of sunlight? That just captured me. And that story has stuck with me ever since. And so you mentioned Untitled, which was the kind of like pamphlet book that I wrote many, many years ago. But in 2018, I got a contract for this book called Exit the Cave. And I intended to write a book, kind of a follow-up to Untitled, that it was going to be a creative process book. I was going to sort of expound on the tips and tricks and things that I had learned kind of through this lens of what it looks like to learn some kind of truth and then go back into the darkness and tell everyone that there's so much more. At that time, I had just left staff of a big mega church to pursue professional filmmaking and as a commercial director. The church was falling apart. Many of our friends were moving the town that we thought we would live in for the rest of our lives and that these would be our people for the rest of our lives. And everything was kind of falling apart. And every time I sat down to write this sort of how-to manual of the creative process, I just couldn't do it. So I did what every responsible, mature, professional writer does, which is ignore and delete every email from their agent and publisher for just months.
This is, you are not an Enneagram 3, I will say.
Oh God, no. No, I'm a 7. Oh, man. And so also a great thing about 7s is we run from our pain.
Well, you certainly didn't run from it. I mean, yeah. So tell me how you stopped running from your pain because, take us forward.
Yeah. So I finally got the courage to have a meeting, a Zoom call with my agent, Alex. Mm-hmm. And in that call or on that call was a woman who I had never met before. And I realized I had been bamboozled into an intervention. Alex introduced this woman, Meredith, who is a writing coach. And he said, I think this might be helpful for you. And I was like, I think you're right. And so Meredith and I sat down and she said, forget everything up until this very moment. Forget about the book that you sold. Forget about the thing that you think you're supposed to do. And that was where I was stuck. I was surrounded. I was lucky enough to be surrounded by so many other authors in that kind of like Christian evangelical mega church sort of author speaker space. And I had become overwhelmed by that because I thought then there was a way that I needed to write this book. And she said, forget about that. Where the distinction for me was, I feel like I'm supposed to be teaching. And she says, okay, that's what you're feel like you're supposed to do because that's what's around you. What do you actually feel like you want to do? I'm like, I just want to tell my story. I think my skill is not as a teacher, but as a storyteller. And so she said, great, let's do that. And so for the next 6 months, 1,000 words, 5 days a week, I would send her on repeat. And eventually I started to find my way through and realized that, I mean, I basically like did the most metaphor thing you could do, which is like, I came out of the cave as I wrote this book, Exit the Cave, and realized I just wanted to talk about the cave and the shadows and the places, the dark places that I had been in the hopes that if I did that, that one, I could be free of those stories in a way that I hadn't been before. Mm. And that as I told those stories, as I told those secrets, that those reading or listening might begin to have the courage to do the same.
Yeah, I mean, it truly was such a open and vulnerable and redemptive book. And it's not a book. It's an open and vulnerable and redemptive life that has been captured, a piece of it in a book. And I wondered if we could talk for a minute, just because this did stand out for me. My background is in therapy before I was a pastor writer. And I think that it's become more common for women to speak about sexual abuse, particularly childhood sexual abuse. Yeah. But I'm curious how you've experienced the ramifications of being a male who suffered abuse. And do you think that there's still a stigma around speaking out that's stronger for men?
100%. Yeah. I mean, I think we're TBD on what this will be like. I do think a lot, it's interesting timing because Marcus Mumford just put out an album, a self-titled album, and in it, the title track, and basically a lot of the album tells about his own story of sexual abuse. And that gave me a great amount of courage just even in the last month or so as that has come out. But I do think that there is a stigma about it for men. I think that there is a lot of shame tied up in that. I feel that as well on the abuse side, but as well as the addiction side. I think that it's very in vogue, forgive the term, to discuss your kind of alcohol and drug addiction, the amount of sobriety that that is happening around those topics. Alcohol in particular is just incredible. There's been an explosion of it. And thank God, I think so much of that is really needed for people to step out of the shadows. But then when you look at some of the other stuff like eating, disordered eating or sex addiction, which is where my proclivities sent me, there really is. And there were moments in the book that I talk about specific things that I say that I did or was done to me that I wrestled with both my therapist and my wife to be like, are we going to say that? Like, are we going to say those things? And we came down to the place where we wanted to say what was true, but we only wanted to say what would be helpful. And it turns out that those two things are the same. And I will say this, that a very good friend of mine recently, who was an early reader, sent me some feedback and their first words were, thank you. And they began to sort of me too their experience, both as a person who experienced abuse and who found themselves addicted in some of the same ways that I was. And I think that, you know, certainly in this Christian author, speaker, pastor space, that there are a lot of us out there that are struggling and wrestling. And so I do hope that this will offer some amount of freedom. But I do think that there is a stigma. And maybe this is just a an opportunity for some of that to be removed. And what the hell, I'll go first.
I remember, I mean, you know, sort of on the flip side, I feel like we should just like normalize like, hey, sin is destructive in every pattern, in every way that it can possibly destroy life. It will. It doesn't matter if you're male or female. I remember being with a woman who spoke about her porn addiction. And she used the phrase, like, I want to give people the gift of going first. And that's always stuck with me. This was like 15 years ago, probably. And I thought about that concept of like, your book is giving people the gift of going first so that there can be a response. And to do it in a way that kind of connects also the brokenness that you experienced that came to you and then how that connected to the way that that was manifesting and playing out in your own behaviors, I think is really, really helpful for people too. And I want to go to that moment in the book. It's kind of the way that you open up your story where you talk about having this panic attack and going to a therapist and having a therapist tell you that you were an addict. And I wondered if you could just walk us through like what that felt like and what some things that you've learned from that experience about how you care for people now in response.
Yeah. I had come to a place where I could no longer outrun my past and my story. And the body keeps the score. And as much as I tried to disassociate from the pain of my past through my addiction, which was acting out in all kinds of really unhealthy sexual ways that was, you know, destroying my life. I talk about it as the gift of rock bottom, of, you know, coming to a place where when you come to the end of yourself, it's like, well, where else can you go? And so when I think about in the book, I write sitting in this therapist's office, and he just sort of says, yeah, I think you are an addict. The words of that, the kind of profound, there's a mixture of shame because, yeah. And then, freedom, because it's like, there it is. There, it's just out there. There are witnesses. And so for me, identifying as that began to set me free. And it really was a gift. And also, it's ironic, you mentioned that maybe one of the first times that you encountered any of my work was at the story conference. And I did this little story of this dinosaur. But I remember it prefaced a keynote with Ian Morgan Cron, who's become a friend. And he, and I quote him in the book saying, the good news is we're all addicted to something. And so some of us just have the great benefit of being addicted to some of the bigger things that ruin our lives quick enough. Hopefully we can be caught by some sort of bottom before it falls out and we can begin moving towards some kind of freedom. But we're all addicted to something, and that's great news. So we all have the opportunity to bottom out and hopefully not as spectacularly as me or others, but the ability to look at what are the patterns that I am using that are preventing me from either connecting with some part of my past that's incredibly painful, or I'm doing so that I, well, really just that we're, you know, hiding from our pain. That's what I think about. I think about the gift of being an addict. Laura McCowan has a great book called We Are the Luckiest. And she runs a sobriety group called The Luckiest Club. And I think about that term a lot, and she means it. She says, we're the luckiest because every day we get the opportunity to choose life or death every single day. And not everyone gets the opportunity to do so clearly every single day. Yeah. And so I look at it as a gift of rock bottom and a gift of addiction.
When you blame, like if you, let's take Blaine of today and then maybe 6 months after that therapist intervention, that moment. And just kind of like when you think about if you were going to meet and intersect with a person who is either hearing this and they're like, I know that I've had these moments in my life where I feel like God breaks through and says like, are you going to exit the cave? I mean, that you kind of have that moment.
Yep. Your moment of clarity.
That moment of clarity. Like, am I going to take the invitation that this is, whether it comes in like a hot flash of like sweat and like whatever, or just a sense of like, oh, I feel understood. Maybe this thing is actually a thing that I have to deal with. Right.
Yep.
So when you think about you of the Blaine of today, the Blaine of 6 months after that, you know, what would you tell us about the journey for someone who might be kind of embarking upon it?
Oh, it's kind of like parenting. It's like harder than you could ever imagine and better than you could ever have hoped. And so I remember I tell this story in the book. I had been on a Zoom call with a writer's room. So two really successful TV writers. And they were hosting this forum, and a younger writer said, well, how did you make it? how did you do it? And the writer, the guy, he's like, oh, it's impossible. And everybody laughed. And then the room kind of quieted down. And you could tell that the woman who asked that question wasn't satisfied. And there's just this like laser focus between the senior writer and the up and coming writer. And he recognized it, thank God, that he wasn't like so snarky to not see that she really wanted her question answered. And probably he saw some of himself in her. And he went on to say, you just keep going until it isn't impossible. And just one day you start to feel something clicking. It's so imperceptible. Friends of ours lost their daughter, Katie. It's a story I tell about in the book, to an aneurysm. She was this bright and beautiful artist. And just in the middle of a sunny afternoon, as she's driving to work, she has a brain aneurysm, and she was gone in just a heartbeat. And I was interviewing her dad after the loss for a documentary. And I kept saying to him, or I asked him, I said, well, how do you get over it? And he says, you know, people ask me that a lot. How do you get over it? And he said, you don't get over it. You go through it. You go through it, and you let it change you, and you let it do the work that it is supposed to do on you. And so if I look at that guy 6 months ago, or I look at someone who's like, maybe it's time, I go, there's no way over it. You'll only go through it. It's absolutely impossible. And it isn't. And it's harder than you'll ever imagine. And it's better than you could ever have hoped.
So good. I just thank you. Thank you for that. I think that's a beautiful piece of wisdom, like from coming back, you know, and I'm sure going back through your story, did you have any new revelations? I'm curious in this process of writing.
Yes. It's that we are so forgetful. So I kept coming back to some of my core stories. It's that we're so forgetful and we cannot do this alone. So I wrote a book that told kind of my deepest and darkest secrets. I went back to some of the hardest moments of pain and trauma in my life. And through the lens of this idea that you actually can change your past. And by that, I mean going back and realizing you maybe have become an unreliable narrator, as Stephanie Fu says in her memoir. And so you can go back into your story and realize, oh, I maybe have gotten... I got the facts right, but I got the details wrong. That maybe the lesson isn't, oh, I should always protect myself, but maybe the lesson is I need to bless the curiosity and goodness of this person who experienced the harm. And I remember writing through some of those moments and trying to like go, okay, so then what is the goodness? What's the thing that, I would go to my wife or my best friend or my therapist, and I'm like, okay, I'm writing this story about this moment in my past. And I'm like, tell me again, what's the thing I learned? like what's the goodness part of that?
Right.
And it was like always on the tip of my tongue. And then I had to have them reflect back to me. Oh, it was that you had such insatiable curiosity. And that was taken advantage of, or that you wanted to feel held and loved, and that was taken advantage of. And I'm like, oh, right, that's it. And then I would like write it down. But I wrote a whole book of all those stories, and I wrote a book talking about going back into those memories and mining them for the goodness of them. And along the way, I was like, now what is it? And I had to have my community of people remind me where it was. Like I needed that person to come back into the cave, even in my like in my own darkness as I'm writing about it, to remind me that there is more. So that is something that was a profound shock to me. And a humbling thing too, because I was like, I'm the author and I'm going to tell everyone what it is. And that's why I wish, you know, it is silly that a book has just one person's name on it, because it's just a literal army of people like, you know, dealing with my neurosis for 5 years. And then just,
I know.
And then writing. I mean, like, my wife is really the editor of this book. I mean, she's a co-writer, a co-author, really, truly, where I'm like, what am I trying to say here? She's like, you're saying this. And I was like, yep, that's it. Let's just keep it. That's fine. That's good.
Yeah, I think that whole idea of being an unreliable narrator and really, you know, we know that a part of our faith, like a massive practice, right, of the faith is remembering.
Yes.
And I think remembering rightly is what happens when we're in Christ and we can move in that direction. That's the thing that I think is actually the miracle of redemption, is that you can experience the same moment that you already had differently.
Totally.
Like,
yes.
Like Jesus is a time traveler. Totally. Like he actually can.
Oh my gosh. Back. Interstellar is my favorite movie for that exact reason, because of the idea. Can I say something about faith? I think faith we tend to think of as something that you need to like have more of. And so by that you need to then, if that's the perspective, then you have to somehow manufacture it. You have to like get it from somewhere and you have to like dig it up when in fact it's already there. When I took my hiatus, when I realized I was an addict and I realized I needed to take a break from what I was doing, I ended up in Seattle at this school. And the professor, Dan Allender, in the very first course that we take is called Faith, Hope, and Love. And the way he described faith, hope, and love has always stuck with me. And obviously it begins with faith. So the idea of faith in his eyes is almost antithetical to what we mostly think about as it's something we need to like conjure up. That he would describe faith as a remembrance, what you're saying, of God's goodness. So we do time travel. We do go back into the past. We do go look at back at those hard moments of pain and trauma. And we remember the God with us in the moments of the hardest thing of our lives. And so then he would say, okay, so if faith is remembrance, if he came once, he'll come again, then hope is a memory for the future, which is like, what is a memory for the future? Right?
Inception.
It's inception. But you're like, oh, okay. So, and what that means is like, okay, so we think about past as linear. We think of it past, present, future. But the way we experience time is actually past, future, present. It's this idea that whatever's happened to us in the past, we sort of template and project onto the future. And whatever we're imagining about the future is how we live in the present. Well, so then what if you go back, as you say, like go time travel and remember differently?
Yes.
Then that changes the past. Then you start going, oh, well, if the past is different, maybe I can imagine the future differently. And then if I can imagine the future differently, everything changes today. And so faith no longer becomes this thing that you conjure up so that you have. Faith is a remembrance of the goodness that has come before. Hope is faith for the future. And then love is like just like the great thing we get to live out right now.
So good. And Dan, by the way, Dan Allender is like the absolute thought leader that shaped my whole practice as a therapist and really my work now today. And I'm just so grateful.
Oh my God. Dan, I had the opportunity, he interviewed me for a podcast and it was like, imagine writing a novel and then that character that was your guide in the novel come to life and interview in a pod. It was the most meta thing that I've ever experienced. But I owe, and my wife, our family, I mean, we owe so much to the work of Dan and the way that he's been able to interpret so many truths that have influenced our life. I don't even know that you had a Dan Allender.
Oh yeah. I mean, absolutely. 100%. So yeah, I just, sometimes I'm like, when I want to change my life, I'm like, can I move to Seattle? Like, that's literally one of my main moves. Yeah. So, I'm going to stay here though in Richmond. So, okay. I want to ask you one more question before we run out of time.
Of course.
This is a little bit of a deviation, but maybe not.
Okay.
Because now that I know what the original intent of the book was, I'm curious, you started your work, your creative work in a place where you were guarded and hiding and had these secrets, right? And you're still in the work. And I'm curious what you think the link is, if there is one, between creativity and suffering and how that's impacted the work that you do now.
Boy, that is a great question. You know, I've probably gone back and forth on this idea a lot over the last maybe 20 years. I think I probably used to think that you had to be a tortured artist to make good art. I always think of the movie Black Swan. And what she gave... Natalie Portman's character, what she gave to be able to like give this fantastic performance at the end of the movie. And the way the movie ends, spoiler alert, she it's, you can kind of decipher on your own what you think happens at the end. I think that she dies on stage after she's like given her whole self to this performance and everybody stands up and applauds. And I always wonder, like, did they know what she gave and did they care? Like when they're like eating their cheesecake at the whatever after, you know, having their decaf coffee before they like go home to the suburbs, like, did these people really care that she gave that much? And, you know, she would be sort of the classic tortured artist. And I think that 100% that, an enormous amount of art comes from those deeper, darker places. I just don't think that we were designed to stay in those places. And so I think that that's probably the distinction that I make now, is that I absolutely need to enter some of those deep, dark places as an artist, because so many people have experienced that. So many people are there today. It's just true of my own experience. And that's not where I am right now. And that's not, I don't believe that's where any of us were designed to stay. We were created as good. I'm sort of like more like the like Genesis 1 than like Genesis 3 starting people.
It is primary and does come first. So let's
if you're
just
counting. I've also been reading Cole Riley's book, This Here Flesh. And she talks in the second chapter about place. And she just notes that how interesting it is that before the things or people were created, the place was and it was called good. And I think that that's just an interesting note as we're talking about past and history, that, you know, the places that we've come from often are demonized, and we go like, our parents were the worst, and, you know, I should never move me to Blaine, Minnesota, where all these horrible things happened to me. And also, like, it was good. And so I think an answer to your question really is that it is both. As creative people, we should be open to engaging our darkness and our secrets. And we should do so in the service of setting ourselves free and those who are engaging with our art. Margaret says this in the book, but I don't even quote her because I'm just that kind of husband sometimes. She's like, I really should be a co-author on this. I'm like, yeah, I know. But near the end of the book, the chapter Free People, Free People. And so that's the work. The work is to go to the dark, deep, dark places. And the goal then is also to not stay there. And then the goal is to return, and the goal is then to not stay there. It really does feel like more of a spiral than kind of an up and to the right sort of trajectory. Because I think as I get older, I'll continue to go back to the stories that I wrote in the book and mine them for new goodness and new gold. And maybe in some sort of way that that'll be helpful for people 20 years from now. I don't know.
Oh man, I love that, Blaine. Thank you. Thank you so much for just opening your heart to us today. Guys, the book is Exit the Cave. It's fantastic. It's not an easy read in that it does take you to those deep places, but it's a beautiful read. Mm-hmm. And the writing is fantastic. So
thank you.
We can tell you put a lot of work into it. It's awesome. Okay, here's our last question. I always ask everyone
before they
end the show so that we can come out into the light. What's like a product, app, show, like something right now that you're just like, I'm getting an extraordinary amount of joy out of this like small thing in my life?
Oh, Abbott Elementary is a show on ABC. Okay. It is so delightful. It's about this school in Philadelphia, and it is just delightful. It's so good.
Comedy?
Yeah, it's a comedy. Is it
funny? Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm always looking for like amazingly written comedy, like as my favorite go-to. So excellent. It's, all right, Abbott Elementary.
Yep. It is so good. And then my wife and I love stand-up comedy.
Ah, my husband and I do too.
It's so good. And so Fortune, I always get her name incorrect. Fortune Feimster. She's got a new, a new special out that we just
I'm so excited. I haven't really heard of her. Yeah, so fantastic. Awesome. All right, awesome. I'll check that out. Thank you, Blaine, for your time.
Thank you. Lost with you, flying through the mountain ranges, but I never see the danger. The final boss is swinging.